out across the galaxy. This is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
Hello and welcome to the Free Zone. Wow, what a week we have had, guys. I find myself to giggle at points like this. The trauma that we feel. If you look into the ideas of why we laugh, you will find that it's deeply rooted in sorrow. And so I apologize for the minor giggle as I am feeling the weight of the massacre that happened in Las Vegas. We have Friday the 13th coming up. We have so many situations that I want to discuss, but I want to save all that. We're going to save all that. Because, guys, you know what soothes the savage beast? It is music. I mean, for me, I spin a record before I get on the show every time. It gets me in the right mood. I like to go back in time, go back to my youth, listening to the 80s and 90s music. I have a fascinating and amazing collection of music that I can listen to for 2 years and never hear the same song twice. So that's the kind of guy I am. You know, I play the music. I play the bass. Have you heard my band Molecular yet? I don't know if you have, but I'm pretty darn proud of it. So if you ever want to check out molecularband.com and see what kind of music I like to produce, check that out. I'm bringing all of this up because tonight we are talking with Hans Utter. He is an ethnomusicologist. He's an author and producer and a researcher. He's deeply rooted into Indian classical music. And I know him and I really bond on this level. The ideas of frequency, modulation, time, music, and how it affects the physiology of our bodies and how it affects time. Hans Utter's research extends from music cognition to the Persian court music of Central Asia, connecting music, culture practices, and philosophy with human development and world history. And this is going to be an amazing discussion, guys. So please welcome to the Free Zone, Hans Utter. Hi there, Hans.
Hey, how are you? Great to be here, and thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's been a while since we've talked, so I'm really I'm excited to connect with you again. I know you've been off doing all kinds of things. What's been going on?
Well, I've been doing, I just finished kind of tour doing a bunch of concerts. Before that, I had a lot of writing projects ranging from like neuroscience to philosophy to encyclopedia articles. And then prior to that, I was in India. And yeah, so basically I'm glad I've got work. I'm still not back in the academy, and maybe I won't go back, and then, hey, I can be free and just say what I want to. But basically, yeah, so a lot of different things. It's been quite interesting. I definitely feel, you know, blessed in a certain way. I've been able to travel a lot of different places around the country, even though not a big fan of the TSA, because just to be a little graphic, they literally can grab your balls if you don't go through the scanner. If you're a man, it's not too pleasant, but, enjoying just doing a lot of different things. And also, with the research I've been working on, I have actually, been connecting, I think, and improving my overall quality of life or awareness. So that's why I think it is. It's not only interesting, but it's also something that it gives a sort of a tool set that you can start to use in your daily life if you so choose.
You got me thinking about, you know, the trauma that the world just suffered, and more especially the United States. But of course, there's trauma going on everywhere, and then the ability to sit back and enjoy music in the midst of it all. You know, it almost feels like you can't enjoy yourself these days.
Yeah. And that's one of the things too that, well, you know, I just start by saying, why did I just get into this topic out of the blue? It wasn't really out of the blue, because I'd say there's a couple different factors. I'd say the base factor was that I've been overseas in Asia, spent quite a lot of time in India. And one of the attractions of India, it was that it was just a completely different experience of time. The way time moved, it was you stepped into just a different world. But I mean, time was different. You experienced it differently. How things happened, how things took place. It was, and the duration. You'd have a week would seem like a month here in the States, and just contrasting that with the time in the States. So I really, that intrigued me with this idea of there's sort of a collective experience of time that I'm not, it's hard to say where that comes from. And that's something that's always intrigued me. And then the second factor was just, after just deciding I'm just not going to play any more cover music, I'm mostly just doing Indian classical music since that's my livelihood. But a lot of the music people doing stuff, except for original bands, which most by and large are derivative. I'm sure your band is not derivative, but a lot of stuff is just rehashed. But as a musician, one of the easiest ways, if you're a competent musician, is just to play in these cover bands, or even better yet, a tribute band, which I've played in before. And a tribute band is not only playing the song, but playing note for note, even note for live recordings. In a sense, you inhabit this band and this becomes your life. And people make great money doing that. But it really started, the line was Summer of 69. I said, I will never play that song by Brian Adams. And so I still, but just noticing that and just saying like, well, I don't remember the fact that it's just the same songs and just this, everybody is sort of doing it and just become accepted. I mean, I don't know how, people go to the clubs and hear the same songs over and over again.
Well, I remember there, and maybe you know about this, there was a video on YouTube, and I could yell out and ask somebody, but there was, they, I think it was to Smash Mouth, and they were able to do 30 different songs, and they all fit into the frame of this one song. I wish I had this I knew where that was, but have you heard of this, where a person just takes a song and makes it fit every other song?
I've heard the thing where they have the same chord progression used in all these different songs. And that's, I don't know if that's similar. That I'm not familiar with, if that's something different. No, but, there's a lot of repetition with that, but it's not, there's a sense of, okay, you can have a certain type of chord progression that you're going to hear, but I'm talking about these things, which when you're talking about it, you listen to music from your era and you enjoy it, and that's great. You connect with it, and that gives you a sense of history, and just it connects with, your emotional aspect, and it's very positive. But when this is pervasive in the society and you can't, it's almost like you can't escape it. The 60s and 70s. I mean, some of the songs are good. Some of the songs I've grown to hate, just because I've heard them so many times. And some of the songs that are repeated on and off, I think are, they have a little bit deeper type of, connections that are going on with that. But this idea that, just think about it. Was there a time when everything is now focused back on the past, right? It's like we're back cycling in the culture. The nostalgia just keeps getting ramped up and it gets shorter and shorter periods of time. And this is kind of a recent phenomenon, right? I mean, you see this, coming about in different times, but this particular era is really interesting in that there's really a disconnect between, say, the zeitgeist, which is sort of the spirit of the age, and, this kind of actual creativity and things that develop, right, in a natural functioning society. And it's just when you see that, there's probably 100 songs that if you could play anywhere in the country, you'll play those same 100 songs over and over and over again. And they're all, like Cars and et cetera, et cetera. But let me just add here, the other thing that really got me into this topic was when I just was in India and Thailand in March and April. And the first thing I noticed was the whole place felt different, right? It just, the magic, the vibe, whatever you want to call it, that sense I had of the time and this different culture, it seemed like it just, I was there last year. I was like, what has happened here? It's really bizarre. And at the same time, I noticed that you know, out of nowhere, they're playing the same classic rock songs and background music that they do in the States, in India, like in, you know, nice restaurants or things like that. And rock is really not popular in India. They have, you know, they're very much attached to their own Bollywood and their own music. And so that was kind of bizarre. And this went along with the, you know, cashless society thing, rolling out biometric IDs, which, you know, you wonder how would that work in India, but I guess it might. But I mean, there was definitely some rollouts that they were doing of some kind of social engineering things. And at the same time, there's this rock music, just like I hear in the States. You know, I go to the gas station, go to the bus, and I'm like, why this music of this particular narrow window? And these are, you know, and you can go in the 70s, there's probably thousands of songs that are rarely played, and they're great songs, but they never get played. It's the same songs. Well,
yeah, I mean, I call my music collection, I don't know what it is, but I like it. Because, you know, there's not a single record that I have that you're going to hear on the radio, you know, and it's just, I have I could listen to my record collection for 2 years straight, never hear the same song twice. And you folks out there will never hear any of these songs ever. They will never be played on your radio. And I found out that it was John Sudano. John Sudano, who takes Smash Mouth and puts it to every other song, and everything fits, like, constantly, over and over. You can just sing the same song over every other song, and everything fits. You know, it's,
yeah, and that's, you know, that's interesting, you know. But I mean, what to me is interesting is that then the same thing. I went to Thailand. You know, and Thailand, you know, used to be one of those places, like, number one bug out destination. You go to Thailand, you know, it's definitely a lot more first world than India, but it's still very relaxed, beautiful beaches. It's, you know, very, you know, peaceful place. Everything functions. Totally different vibe. Really, like, imposition of, like, a paranoid police state almost. It was hardcore. It was really not that fun to be there. And I just seen these places change overnight. You know, where to the fact where, you know, I mean, people are just getting arrested for just random reasons. There were three people killed just in one day when I was there. Tourists that just died, you know, in various ways, just in this tourist area I was staying at. You know, I'm saying, like, for most people there, they're probably not going to notice it. But at the same time, exact same thing. Where I was staying, every corner was another Thai band, and they're very good, playing the same classic rock songs. Every corner, exactly
every
like this.
Day. All
and I went to get the one thing that really bothered me. I went to get this, like, foot massage, and I had to listen to just, you know, same songs, just like the Who, this boring Who song, this, you know, whatever. It was like, and it was just these songs that I really just, I've grown to hate because I've heard them since I was a kid.
Which makes me wonder, is Tom Petty actually dead? You know, another conundrum, another mystery.
But what I noticed was that this, not only that sense of kind of freedom, right? You step outside this, you know, it's not just hustle and bustle. Your mind feels different. You have a lot more space of just your life, right? Just because it seems like you have a more expansive time, right? That experience. And that's gone. Not only is that gone, but right. Both India and Thailand are moving towards sort of fascist type control places. And in Thailand is much worse. Thailand is basically a military dictatorship right now. But at the same time, both of them are just rolling. This rock is, like, all pervasive. I mean, 98% of the music was the same damn songs. And that's what really kind of got me thinking, like, why is this, what does this mean?
That was going to be my next question. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm going to read the list of, these are songs that are played tens of thousands of times every single day. Okay. And you're going to know all the songs. I'll just read the top 15.
All right.
Number one is Dream On, Sweet Emotion. These are Aerosmith, of course, Along the Watchtower, You Shook Me All Night Long, More Than a Feeling, Boston, Carry On Wayward Son, Peace of Mind, Boston, Crazy on You, number 8, Legs, ZZ Top, Sharp Dressed Man, number 10, Rock and Roll All Night, Kiss, number 11, Bohemian Rhapsody, 13, Renegade by Styx, Magic Man by Heart, Wheel in the Sky by Journey, Blinded by the Light, Manfred Mann, Rush, Tom Sawyer by Rush, and The Joker by Steve Miller. So these songs, we're not talking like, we're talking these songs are, I guarantee you almost anywhere you're in the country, you turn on the radio, you're going to hear one of these songs at some point. And these are played millions and millions of times. And notice they're all, you know, 673, 73, 75, you know, a couple in 83. But first of all, why these particular songs? It's an interesting thing. I mean, there are different regional variations. You know, you have, you know, certain places in California, you'll hear like Oregon, Steppenwolf is the number one most played group, Motley Crue, REO Speedwagon, Metallica, Bruce Springsteen. But think about this. This is stuff, is this, I mean, do we really still need to keep hearing these songs? Now, we always had an oldie station, right? You had the old people, not old people, whatever. You may be a big band station, right, for your era. But not only are you hearing this music in every single band is playing a range, you know, if you go on the list of the top 100 songs, almost 90% of the cover bands are playing the same repertoire. And you have this narrow band of, and really not, some of the songs are pretty good, but you wonder, like, why? Why these songs, and why, what happened where the radio used to be filled with all the new songs coming out, right, in different genres. And this, and then, of course, you have like the hip rap and stuff like that, and the pop, as it gets more and more mechanized, it becomes almost just like a computer, these songs. And then, of course, you get the videos are going very, very far into this extremely occult stuff that's going on. I mean, very deep imagery in the whole video aspect. But, I mean, it's kind of like the creativity is been sucked out, and you have this range. I mean, I'm looking at this chart here, but you look at it, it's basically, it starts in 65 a little bit, but it peaks like 73, and then you have 75 to 80, and then down again 85. But the real peak is between, say, 75 to 80. And it's most of the songs are played just from that little slice of history or time. And some of these bands, they're not that good. I'm sorry. I mean, Roger Daltrey sings out of tune. I don't care if you're a Who fan. Who's okay. But do you need to hear the same song 10,000 times? Where you need to hear it when you're in the gas station? Do you need to hear it when you're in a toilet? You know, when you're shopping? So this was kind of my, you know, jumping off point. I found some very, very interesting reasons for this. And you know, we can go into that, but I'll just go ahead and let you chime in there if you'd like.
Oh no, I was fully enjoying this. I'm back here. You know, I heard every song in my head when you listed them, and they are stuck in there. You got me thinking about the little tones that they play before commercials, tink tink, which I think is like AD, which would spell ad. But you know, there's these strange, but. No, I want to understand this, Hans. I really do. I mean, why this era? Why these guys? And, you know, what is it about that music? Because, like I say, I have a whole collection of music you're never going to hear on the radio. And I always felt, even when I was a fan of somebody like Kiss, like, why aren't they playing Black Diamond? Why aren't they playing, you know, She and some of the other songs that I like? Why do I have to hear Rock and Roll All Night, the worst anthem ever, over and over again when they have so much other great music? You know, I'm thinking back in 1985 when I was saying such things. Maybe it was earlier. Maybe it was like 78, 79. But yeah, I want to know, Hans. I really do. I want to understand why. And I want to know what you found out.
Yeah. Well, no, that's the thing, that there's so much music out there. But again, you know, there are original bands, you know, and of course, you're not going to, generally speaking, you know, if you're touring, you're not going to make that much money doing it. So if you want to actually earn a relatively comfortable living playing music, you got to play in cover bands. I mean, that's kind of the way it is. And that is, that grew to a point. I mean, I guess I'm on the radio, but I had some freakouts, meaning I just started going nuts. You know, I just like play guitar behind my head and just do some inappropriate stage antics. I mean, nothing bad, but I just was like, this will drive me insane if I keep doing this, because it's one thing to listen to, another thing to play it over and over again. And it's like for example, I was in this group and recently, they just played all these car songs, and it was like, that, it was like just hammer, smashing into my head, just meaning that what has gone wrong with culture? I mean, these are okay pop songs, but you know, if you're going to do a cover band, why don't you cover every single, you know, Charlie Parker song note for note? That'd be impressive. John Coltrane or, you know, even the new bands that are coming up are just following in these same formulas. So it's like there are great bands out there, but they're not really getting the radio play. And what's happening, it's narrowing down our experience, not only narrowing down our experience of time, but it's also working within a much larger, far more complex and subtle system that, in the next hour, I think we'll talk about the Vegas thing, is it can be absolutely not subtle at all and extremely brutal as well. But so in order to kind of outline this, I want to just go into why this is possible, right? Why the time that we experience is being recycled to us. People are, you know, constantly this nostalgia thing. You know, you have these coming of age movies like American Graffiti, you know, Dazed and Confused. These are like two polarities, right? But these are, if you start looking at it and you start seeing that, obviously probably not most people listening to these shows, but people are defining themselves to a certain degree through certain films, things that they watched. And there's also the whole influence that we're soaking up constantly of all of these things that are coming into our minds. And I started to realize that the background music thing, which is relatively new, right, is connected with this whole larger edifice. As a caveat here, I'll say it's not operating in the same way on every person, obviously not. But if you look at hyper game theory, it's something like you're going to get a threshold of possible results. And how is this influencing us? How is this changing our own sense of who, what, and where we are? And most importantly, why? Is this something that's just a spontaneous thing? Has our culture just run out of gas and we're just, you know, eating, just chewing up our past and just regurgitating the same crap? I mean, because really, I mean, some of these bands, you know, they're not as good as we think they are, right? But the songs themselves, we don't even necessarily hear the song. They operate within this broader framework, but they can become triggers. They can become influence points, not just the music itself, in some cases the music, but in other cases, it's a lot deeper than that. So to explain how this happened, so what you have really, you have to go back to the year 20 BC. Just kidding. 1920s. I thought that'd be kind of fun.
Okay.
I thought it'd be fun. I probably could, but so
you probably could. Yeah. Sticks and, you know, where music came from. I mean, you know, it's in our souls, right? I just want to point that out to the public,
actually, you know, that was supposed to be a joke, but actually that is actually where I should go back to, because here's the thing. Why is this so important? Because with sound, right, with music was the first way that humans, right, and this is before any other type of technology, were able to interact and define themselves in relation to the environment and able to bring to life, you know, their histories, but also really it became a grounding and a connection within the social, but also relationship between the environment, between space and place. And also it ties into, you know, mating and all this other stuff. But so music, you have to also look at sound. The sound is one of those things, it's a very important sense, but a lot of times it's subliminal, it's threshold. Unless, you know, you hear a bomb goes off or a dog barks, but we really use sound to place ourselves in the environment. And a lot of times you'll hear something before you see it, right? So not only that, it's something that's running on a subconscious level, but it is a very important sense for survival, right? Or just, so that has that, the thing of sound, you know, if you listen to every background sound around you, you know, I mean, it can be kind of interesting, but you can just start noticing that most of the background sounds around you are unconscious. And that's just, but at the same time, if it's totally silent, we use our sound, even you're walking, you're placing yourself in that physical environment through the sound, right? So it has this sort of baseline function, right? And then you take that and we go into the realm of popular culture, which started in the 1920s. And this is a really big shift, and where it really hit was in the 1960s. But in the 1920s, you suddenly have this type of mass culture that is being deployed, you know, in various, you know, all throughout the country that everyone can access, right? So everyone can watch the same movie. It's not like you might have a group, a theater group would perform or something like that. You can go to New York and see the Ziegfeld Follies or something. But, you know, if you're in some town in Pennsylvania, you're most likely they're not, you know, you'd have to go to New York or, you know. But the popular culture started to make fundamental shifts in American mentality, in the beliefs, and especially in how we locate ourselves within culture and the cultural identity. And one of the first really big influences of that was the motion pictures. And it's hard to remember now. Anybody who's not in the United States, you're missing out. No, I'm talking about the United States because I know that the best, but you might find similar things going on in other countries. But, you know, the small towns were the traditional backbone of America. This was where America took place. This was the real identity. And you had, I've been in some very nice small towns that are just beautiful places. Recently I was in upstate New York, and there's some places that are really phenomenal. I've also been in small towns that are just really scary. And even, you know, it's interesting to see, but this has just died, right? But with the advent of cinema, suddenly people are seeing these people living these different lives. Oh, they're going, you know, I want to leave this town. My life is going nowhere. I need to become a star. I need to go to Hollywood. You know, so that was one of the things, is this sort of starting a type of a social exodus. But at the same time, you have this reduction of the family, the importance of the family. You could say it's the traditional American character, you know, action, man of God or whatever. But this idea of, you know, having this kind of connection with a tradition, with some kind of, you know, practicality, et cetera. But suddenly you're moving from this very grounded culture to this culture where suddenly everything is kind of up in the air, and you're getting all these people are getting different ideas. They're hearing music. It's creating, you know, new desires. At the same time, that began to erode the whole foundational aspect. And a lot of this was done, you know, people deliberately wanted to do that. For example, the Dada movement, you know, there were a lot of things that wanted to free man from, say, art, the restrictions of art. So instead of, you know, really spending a lot of time doing some realistic painting, just throw some paint on the canvas and say, this is my brain experiencing nirvana. And there you go, $20 million, right? So this moving of the threshold started to really shift the whole value-based and belief structure that people had. And one other important thing to note is that art, before the advent of the mass culture, in general, what was considered real was nature, right? The natural world is reality. And then art, poetry, whatever, is a way to connect or bring that to life, or you know, expand on our notion of what human experience is and things like that. But this grounding that there is a real world, this nature is real, and then you also have, you know, you say, well, value systems. I mean, you could say God, or you can say a strong father figure, or even a matriarchal society. But you have some kind of rigid meaning you have a grounding, but you have this sense of reality. Now, suddenly we move to a state where all this art and media and music is all just reflecting on itself. People no longer have a ground in their immediate environments. And in fact, the world becomes more consciousness. We experience the world as consciousness, not as reality of nature, which used to be kind of the fundamental thing. We're now basically, our minds, our social world is being shaped. And in fact, in a certain way, it is the media. Our consciousness, our shared reality is now this completely artificial imposition, some of which can be very good, but some of which cannot be good, right? And this is how it's possible now to move to the state where we are now, where this sort of culture is now developed, where we're really living in this self-referential, really artificially constructed social world that we share. And it's important to understand too that we base a very important human value, of course, is social acceptance, right? If you don't want to be thrown out from the cave, right? This is a fundamental thing. This is a survival thing as well. So you start seeing that people are now modeling their behavior on what they see on the television, on what they hear, on the media. And so this becomes, instead of the, say, whatever traditional system or experience of actual natural world, you're basing your life on what you're taking as the authority, which is coming from these images, right? These images or the music, et cetera. And so this is really where we are right now, in such a way that you could say that there's a, we'll call it derealization, right? There's a moving away from, say, what is actual reality to this sort of shared experiential pop culture world. And, you know, what I discovered working on this, even if you think it doesn't affect you, this, some of the stuff can be deeply linked in your mind. And it's something you really, like I said, unless you were in some cave somewhere and, you know, this is going to have impacted you in some way.
Let me throw in one example here. This is a simple one, but it's bizarre. Beyonce was on stage and her hair got caught in her earring, and in a head swoop, she yanked her earring from her ear, ripping her earlobe. The outcry from the public, from her fans, the Church of Bay, which exists, all right? There is a Church of Bay, folks. Church of Beyonce, it does exist. But not the members, but just the fans themselves began cutting themselves on Twitter, Instagram, all over the place. Bleed for Bay, because she ripped her ear. You know, that's a pretty freaky level of bonding between the artist, the music, and the person.
No, absolutely. And that's exactly sort of what I'm talking about. And I'll just give a few more just areas what happened, right? So we have these new values coming in, and especially you look at the 1960s. One of the values is a democratization of art. It means that anybody can do this. Anybody can play music. Anybody is, you know, everybody is a painter, even if they, you know. And so the thing is that what happens is that something as powerful as music suddenly becomes, you know, there are some very super talented rock musicians, but let's be honest, I mean, you know, it doesn't take a lot to play 4 or 5 chords, even to play a blues riff solo. I mean, it does take something, but compared to really learning, as you know, what was required to become even a folk artist in certain areas, or as a classical musician, it's a whole different ballgame. It's really not that thing. But this idea that there's no more levels and anybody can do it, which is removes hierarchy. It removes tradition.
Motley Crue had a lot to do with that. I'm not really making a joke, but Motley Crue, I mean, Mick Mars was rated the number one guitarist, even over Eddie Van Halen back in the Van Halen Eddie days. You know, and you know, I could play every song from Motley Crue on my guitar with power chords when I was 15 years old. You know what I mean? And they're going to rate this Mick Mars as number one guitarist. And I could do it at 15, playing right along with it. So, you know, there's sellability, putting out that black album with the black pentagram. I know you mentioned that a little bit, the culture of all of this. Yeah. You know, you're completely dead on with this. And there has been no renaissance of music in forever. And no one does need to have that classical training. And if they do, they often die. I think of Randy Rhoads, who brought classical music into heavy metal. And he was absolutely phenomenal. But, you know, he died. And there's been a lot of deaths in the music realms, which really affects people as well. I mean, that's another layer of it. When Chris Cornell died, I mean, there was mass depression around, you know, as each of them died, Prince, Michael Jackson, and everybody. You know, we need this music. And then when the artist is gone, then it just falls on humanity like a rock on their chest, you know? But yeah, absolutely. There's no renaissance of music, and there is absolutely no more study for being exceptional in this.
Yeah, and it's not just exceptionality, but it's also people are elevated to this very high status when you learn more about music. Like, this guy sucks ass. I'm sorry to be blunt there, but you know, some of these guys, these bands, and these people that we idolize, or the people idolize, really are not that good. And it's, and if you go back to it, it's a lot of that whole rock stuff. It's just regurgitated blues stuff. You can hear everything. It's just this, and it's a pentatonic scale. So it's a very limited emotional range. It's like suddenly this vast range of human experience, right? And all the different emotions that music can invoke. And the fact that, you know, I mean, it's possible. Maybe I wouldn't have been a musician if, you know, if I was in a different time. I mean, I certainly, sitar is quite difficult and quite demanding. But, you know, I mean, it doesn't mean there's nothing wrong with that. If you say, no, this is something that really requires, not everyone can do this. Not everyone can, no, everyone can play at home. Everyone should participate in music. But to be considered an artist, to be elevated front society, then people, even if it's terrible, people are going to say, this is great. So yeah. And some of these guys are just really, they're not talented, but also you go deeper level, what messages are being deployed? What is going on with the way that we're shaping our own life narratives? When you cut out this idea of tradition, when you start to the real world, you're not, the reality is not nature. Reality is mass culture that you experience. And this is not something you blame yourself for. It's a fact. You know, your brain for survival is going to adapt to the mass culture, right? You know, you don't want to, if you're in the tribe and, you know, you do something, you run naked down the street and it's not acceptable in the tribe, you can be thrown out and you'll die, right? So that's where this kind of feeling of fitting in and belonging and modeling this stuff. But then when you set the bar so low, at the same time, what messages are coming through? What is filling your mind through some of these people that have been pumped up as they're really great artists? I mean, like, I'll be honest, like Michael Jackson, his first few albums are phenomenal. Super, really great music, to be honest. I mean, really beautifully arranged and everything like that. But at the same time, why is this icon, this pop singer, causing mass hysteria and deaths, or Beyonce ripping your ear? I mean, how have you identified yourself with this person? A, doesn't give a rat's ass about you, but B is, you know, what are they really doing? I mean, okay, Michael Jackson's talented. Go ahead.
Let's throw in another layer here then. Being propelled to the top, and I'm going to use Lady Gaga as an example, because Lady Gaga just came out saying that she had a random meeting with the devil and was given the opportunity to become Lady Gaga. And now she is suffering from fibromyalgia and screaming for an exorcism because she joined the Illuminati to produce this music. She says, all right, this is what she's saying, that her joining the Illuminati has possessed her soul, and now she needs an exorcism to remove her fibromyalgia. So now we've got this secret organization that even the elite stars are saying, hey, you know what? Satan came to me and told me to be a musician.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that's interesting too, because I've seen some people talking about Illuminati. Like, for example, I forget where I was, and I saw there's a show on MK Ultra on National Geographic. So you also have to understand there's a possibility of, it's the cat's out of the bag. Now we got to shift the narrative again. So let's do this. You know what I mean? So that there's a couple of different layers. Now, is Lady Gaga is, I mean, this, I, well, Gaga is a great way to go into it. The idea of Gaga, you go back to Dada, you have this destruction of meaning, the destruction of beauty. There's no more truth. And that's what we're dealing with. There's no more truth. And everything means exactly what you want it to mean. And your primary purpose is just to get off, is to have orgasms, to have pleasure, to, you know, free yourself. But this whole idea of freedom and liberation is based also on this sort of annihilation of what actually grounds you, right? And so really we live in a web of imaginary consciousness in terms of our psychosocial world that to at least our subconscious minds is kind of our reality. Now, when you start stepping out of that, as I'm sure, you know, you have and many listeners have, that it can be a little odd, right? You're going to feel some disconnection. You're like, you know, it doesn't mean you don't have to, you know, go climb a tower somewhere and get zapped by Tesla rays, but you can just start to just notice and notice these things. But, you know, again, I mean, just a little bit off topic, but I mean, the music videos, what's happened with music videos? You know, this has, this is produced. I mean, if you look at what is going on in these videos, it is so far over the top in terms of every kind of not only debased but occult type of entrainment, occult symbolism of really, and this, a lot of this stuff like Beyonce, and these are, you know, a lot of people listening, well, are little girls, little kids. I mean, this is like kids.
What immediately comes to mind is Keisha, and Katy Perry with E.T. and having all the little children singing, fill me with your poison, I want to be abducted, I want to have a supernatural baby by being raped by an extraterrestrial, you know, these, and you see these little girls singing that. I remember back when it was, oh, if you want to get with this, you got to put a ring on it, you know, and you'd see the little girls singing that. And then like when Miley Cyrus came out as no longer Hannah Montana, and she was just Miley Cyrus, she was in a cage and dressed with black wings like a fallen angel. And the song was, you can't tame this, you can't stop me, I'm going to do what I want to do, and you can't do anything about it, because that's the narcissistic world I want you all to live in.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because what you have to, well, what I want to emphasize is that, so say you're a little kid and you're listening to this music, what is being programmed into your mind? How is this actually shaping you in ways you're not aware of? In what ways is this, you know, and you can see, yeah, people are, you know, injuring themselves, that the stars are injured, but I mean, you know, okay, that's the most sort of over the top level, right? But most of the time it's not going to happen on that level. It's going to happen on a level where this is connecting into your mind and becoming with all these different symbolic resonances. It's not just a piece of music or a video. It's tied in with all these other aspects. But this can, which I can explain, we'll get into, is how this can actually start to subtly shape not only your life. It can shape your life, but it can also shape your perceptions, and these things can act as types of influences that are absolutely, you're not aware of, because you've kind of, you know, taken this in. Now, it's not like, you know, it's like, what is it, the Manchurian Candidate or something, and, you know, but, well, it can be, of course, but basically it's more like as soon as you start to notice that and start to bring this stuff up to your threshold of awareness, especially around your environment, and start to notice this stuff, then this is the beginning sort of process to kind of unwind it. And that's a good thing about this music thing, is that it's actually, now it can be very harmful, but it's a relatively innocuous way, right, to start to this whole system. So it does go pretty deep, much, you know, because if you look at it, you have to look at these as conglomerate, these are like symbol image structures, they're complexes. It's not just one song and one video. How does this relate to all these other elements? How does this tie in? If we just look at kids, there may be subtle things with the kids show. There's different, so these are, there's not just one level, right? These things are, you have to see it more of like as a whole complex, right? And this, what this does is kind of create this artificial reality for your mind that you inhabit now, because this is our sort of our space has now become, you know, ideas, media, visual, you know, whatever, you know what I mean? So this is, so this is kind of what the part of it is there. And then the whole other aspect is the time aspect and how this influences. And I am wondering, if can this actually change the reality that we experience? To what extent, if the mass consciousness starts changing, is this going to start affecting our perceptions and our experiences? And I think it can, at least that's, I've been sort of noticing that a bit, right? There is a sense, you know, that if you're aware of it, there is sort of like, you can sense almost like this kind of dissolving or derealization or some very odd things going on, or people almost like robot, like moving around and stuff. You know, if you start to wake up to it, it can be a little bit disconcerting.
And we're learning that time is in our minds, and that maybe collectively we create time. So if we're talking about some elusive group like the Illuminati or these sinister wizards, sorcerers that are trying to manipulate our reality, then what better way than to manipulate time? Because we all know that time shifts. It goes fast, it goes slow. It depends on where you're at and what you're doing and what you're thinking. And then collectively, we all seem to create time according to most of the physics that are showing of late, you know. Is time simply in our minds, or not simply, but created by the cohesive thoughts of mankind?
Well, you know, time. So let's just go into that. I'll bring up some other things a little bit more later about that. But that's a good point to go into. So first of all, you know, there is, obviously, you know, we can go into the whole thing of the calendar, manipulation of calendar. You have this, the first, the mechanical clock is based on this Newtonian motion of physics. But then also, according to, I forget what his name is, E. Michael Jones or something, he said Newton was actually importing some kind of hermetic occult practices under the guise of science, right? So that's possible. But this clock became this structure, right, of the mechanical universe going around in a circle with the minutes being ticked off. And from that, this clock became a model of a society functioning as a mechanism, as a mechanistic society. And this is, you know, 16th, 17th century, et cetera.
Yeah,
and
without a doubt, the Catholic Church made sure that you could hear a bell from each church to the other church. It was a regulation that churches had to be close enough that when the time was struck, you could hear it from wherever you're at, you know?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, it's more just like the visual representation of time. It's just this, you know, just you're going around in this space, right? You're kind of, obviously we have duration of, you know, epoch history, but in terms of human experience of time, and some people say time does not exist, right? I mean, what we have, but how we experience time is duration between events, and that's why music is so important, right? You hear a beat, dum. Dumb. So you're hearing these events and your mind is linking that together. And it's really this continuity principle that starts to create our experience, right? And that's why music can be so powerful, not only on, say, the level of, you know, relation of what you remember or any kind of things, but also just on our direct experience of time itself can absolutely transform and change our...
Speaking of time, starting to come through like Max Headroom a little bit here. I'm not sure what's going on, but we're getting a little bit of a weird glitch. So I'm sorry to interrupt, but we were missing a few words as you were speaking as it was glitching out. So I was hoping maybe it might clear itself up.
Okay. And if I can maybe repeat some of that. But so I'll just, you can always edit this. But yeah, so maybe at the same time, music influences our sense of time, our perception, our temporal perception, right? And that's kind of you can say the base level of time is like duration. Duration is there, but you know, more importantly, it's what's known as the psychological present, which is a linked event that, like, if I'm talking to you, you're not breaking it down into every single syllable, right? But you're following along. Your mind is putting that together as one thing, like at least like a sentence or things like that, right? So this is how we link together events and experiences and create a sense of continuity. If you rupture that, then if you don't have that, if you're not able to bind events together to experience your present reality as having some kind of connection, you know, you can absolutely not function at all. You become like basically some type of schizophrenia, right? So, but that's one aspect. But the other aspect is our sense of time, which is you could describe as temporal balance or temporal imbalance. So how are we connected ourselves with our, I was critiquing this idea of living in the now, right? Because what is the now? You never can be in the now. It's already gone. I'm saying live in the present. I think that this idea of live in the now is kind of a false notion in that you can never really reach the now, but you can be in the present. And the present is where you are right now with what you're experiencing, right? And at this time, how are we connected with our sense of our past, of who we are, of what we in our lives, of what, you know, our memories, whatever, every ability we have or sufferings, where are we right now, which is a field of action, right, in this present, because I'm using the word now, but that's just a marker. In the present, we can actually act. You can actually do something in the present. The present is really, of course, where you live, but you're always, I mean, I guess you could say if you become ultimately enlightened, you know, and you go to the fourth, that's called the Tutoria, they talk about in like yoga or Buddhism, right? You can potentially maybe transcend all temporality completely. But for, you know, most of us, you know, we also, we're always in this thing. You're always engaged in something. You're, whether even if you're sitting and clearing your mind, you still sat down, you still, you know, you still get up, right? So you're, we're always kind of on this flow. But how do you see yourself? How is life balanced on this potential? Because if you have a balanced sense of time, not only are you connected with what you are, you have a relaxed sense of time unfolding. You don't feel like you're being strained or rushed, or you're not, you know, anxiety ridden. At the same time, you can project into the future. You can set long-term goals. You can do lots of things. So this idea of being balanced temporally in our experience of time is fundamental. Now, temporary time imbalance, depression, right? You're constantly cycling through the past. Your mind is focused on the past, you know, anxiety, stress.
And the future of anxiety, yeah.
Yeah, and then everything, you're compressing your future, right? You're if you look at it, like people, you know, they're just looking at all these future events. And so these are examples. And a great example, say Burning Man, right? Burning Man is something where, you know, people go there and have this one part of the day where they're really happy, right? The year, right? They go there and they freak out and then they go back to their lives, and their lives seem, this is, I mean, talking to people that are, you know, part of that culture, and they said that they feel more kind of, you know, they're just waiting for the next Burning Man. Everything, right, their entire life is around the anchor. So this has now become an anchor their entire lives, right? If you imagine that this is a time event, but it's unfolding, right? And but what's happened is you have this static sort of living in the now, right? Which is also, it can be an imbalance, right? If you're just enjoying yourself, partying, you know, just do whatever you want, you're connecting what you're, you know, your past and your whatever, and you're also not really setting any goals. And the fact is that may be nice for a while, but at a certain point, you're going to end up like, oops, what are the past 20 years, you know? And,
right.
And so a lot of this is being instilled also on the message level of the music, right? Of taking us off how we see ourselves, of what we can achieve, right? You set up the live fast, die young, right? So James Dean. And I'll just say that, you know, James Dean, watch his movies again. He's really not good of an actor. In a couple of movies, he's awful. But why is this guy this icon? This guy is an icon of what, the, you know, you be like James Dean. It's like you're a god. You've become a god. You're a star. You've ascended. Because if you look at this sort of mass culture, it has its own level of divinities and hierarchies, right? And this is a replacement with the religion dissolving. Whether or not people say they're atheist or not, that the parts of you that want something that's bigger than yourself, that want an experience that's connecting you with the world, are going to gravitate, unless you're conscious of, right, are going to gravitate towards what's around you, which is that.
Yeah.
So that culture.
Hey, Hans, we're going to have to wrap up this first hour. We're almost done here, and we're getting a few glitches, so I would like to reconnect with you. If you could maybe mute right now, because I think it's really just doing some really weird stuff, and we're gonna have to reconnect.
Okay, I'm gonna hang.
Well, don't hang up, because I wanted to cover a couple of things, and then we'll figure this thing out. But so as we're looking at this puzzle, and we're realizing that we're all interlinked in this universe through time that doesn't exist except for as it is generated by the mind of mankind. We don't know what now is. We don't know, and you can only make an action in the present. And so all future thought, all of these, if you're not in balance with this, will absolutely throw you into chaos and depression. But we know that there are sinister forces at work that are working behind the scenes, and they're magicians, they're wizards, they're sorcerers, they're doing nefarious acts, and using even concepts like MKUltra. So you had brought this up, Hans, and I want to bring this up at the end of this hour and a couple of things real quick that the people need to know this week. And that is, okay, so I didn't really have a statement for you guys on Las Vegas at this point. Obviously, the official narrative does not fit what we're seeing in people's responses. You know, were there two shooters? Were there other people involved? Who was that lady who went in and warned everybody they were going to die? How did this guy show up with, you know, this massive weapons and automatic weapons and all of those questions, right? Those are all being sussed out by those wonderful researchers, everybody following all the threads. But I wanted to add something to the thread that might have been overlooked. And this is a story from September 25th. And this is a story of a former Tennessee police officer who was arrested near the White House Sunday, the September 25th, after authorities said that he had an arsenal of weapons in his vehicle. And he stated that he had a chip implanted in his head. Now, Master Bates, he was caught with his pants unzipped, and this is what caught the police officer's attention. But 37-year-old Timothy Joseph Bates of Collierville, Tennessee, was cited for urinating in public. But when questioned and found with this cache of automatic weapons, numerous automatic weapons, shotguns, and even knives and brass knuckles outside of the White House, let me just reiterate that, when the officers approached Bates to speak with him, officials said Bates stated that he was blackjacked in the head. That he was blackjacked in the head when he was with the Memphis Police Department, implanted with a chip in his head, and offered $28.7 million by the Department of Homeland Security and the state of Tennessee to participate in MK Ultra, which he claimed was managed by the CIA. So, you know, here we have Timothy Bates, September 25th, outside the White House with a cache of weapons, claiming to have a chip in his head, claiming to be a part of the MK Ultra program, and that he was blackjacked into coming there. No one knows what he had intended to do with the brass knuckles, weapons, shotguns, and automatic rifles. Bates was taken for a mental observation before he was later taken to jail for prosecution. He was charged with illegally carrying a rifle or shotgun. You know, so this is how strange things get. And one more list on the wizard scale. As you guys know, I watch the dates, I watch the numbers, and how this type of calendar time, like 9/11, you know, these are symbolic dates. These are symbolic numbers. 9/11 obviously is straight Luciferian programming. But there was another one that was on my mind, which was 10/13, Friday the 13th, to be exact. And this year, this Friday, is Friday the 13th, 10/13. And when I look at that number, I see the Knights Templar. I see that because 10/13 was the day that the palpable and the king and the pope came together to take down the Knights Templar because of their financial exceptions. they were too rich, and they needed to burn the Templars at the stake. Of course, they were also practicing ritual magic, but let's not get into all of that. The 10/13, bigger than 9/11, was an article that came out after I was on Alex Jones stating that 10/13 would be the next 9/11. No one really noticed when this happened, but it did happen. And the reason 10/13 was bigger than 9/11 when I was on Alex Jones was that that was the day that Ben Bernanke signed the banker bailout and all the shenanigans began to unfold of all that, right? So 10/13 was a crash of the banking system. The Knights Templar are known for creating the banking system. You see, you could leave gold with the Knights Templar. They would give you a note. You could take that note and get gold at the other side so that you wouldn't get robbed and things. That's where our checking system actually came from, was the Knights Templar having so much gold that they could write you notes for it. So that's where we get this whole concept. So 1013 is wrapped heavily around the Federal Reserve and our money system. And I just want to point out to you guys that it just turns out that Federal Reserve Vice Chair Stanley Fischer has stated he is going to resign for an unexpected departure on 1013. So let's have a look and watch what happens this Friday the 13th when it comes down to these banking systems and the sorcerers behind the calendar. We can start to look at things and put them together in this way. So we will see what comes of that. So Hans, we have just, we're pretty much there. So any last statements, tell anyone where they can get your stuff and we'll move on into the members section.
Yeah, HansOtter.com is my website. I've got some CD sale. I'm really having some new books coming out that I'm working on. So please, please, the support or donations are always welcome. And definitely appreciate your listening. And as we continue, I think that we are at a really crucial period right now. I think we're kind of hitting a threshold point. And that's what I think we're talking about in the second half. But I just wanted to mention one thing. Money, time is money, is another fundamental exception of time. And this is the magic. Look at, you have a mortgage until you die, right? People's lives, their time, their life becomes money, becomes this, the time, right? So this is another aspect of, and then if you say the wizard, you control money, you control time, and then this ties into all these dates. And in fact, where I think what's happening on a deeper level of all this stuff, this past is actually sort of a disillusion of what you call history, right? To remove the flow of human history, and we'll discuss exactly what that could possibly entail.
Absolutely. So folks, come on over to freemantv.com and subscribe so that you can get all these amazing hours, because my time is my money as well, and I need your support to keep this thing going. So thank you guys so much for being out there. I love you all, and I can't wait to sit on a drum and jam with each and every one of you sometime in the near future. Maybe we'll form our own little collective and step out of time and make our own music. I would love that so much. So I hope you'll all come over too. Yeah?
I said, hey, Freeman, I'm in your neck of the woods. Maybe we'll get together.
Awesome. I'm turning into quite a bass player now, so I'm having a lot of fun with that. But guys, yeah, this is a huge, huge issue, because you all know it. You've seen it. You hear it. Every time you turn on your radio, it's the same thing over and over. So we're going to dig in deeper as to why this is. And I think Hans has a few statements to talk about Las Vegas. Just the concepts that we have are, if we're in a collective time zone, then obviously we're in a collective trauma zone. And I certainly had a very difficult morning that morning, even before I knew the massacre had happened. So I think we're all connected in that way. And music has run through the hearts and the souls of all of us. And it really makes an amazing impact. And to have these manipulators utilizing that non-talent to bring us into mediocrity and to remove exceptionability for us, and to never allow a renaissance, is sad. So I hope we can change all that, guys. And I think we could do it through music, and I think we can be happy. And if we are ever going to find that road to our peaceful divine state, it will be through the luxury of music. So thank you all so much. I hope my exit music isn't too loud for you. I'm my own technician here, guys. So if there's anything wrong, let me know, because it's me. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm figuring this all out as I go. So anyway, thank you.
This is really now, a lot of this is taking place on the level of consciousness. So there is a way, I think you absolutely referred in that it's totally possible now, if you're willing to really work. You can evolve very rapidly because of everything that's happened. But this is it's not only the prison, but it's also the way out of the prison.
Exactly. That's why they're using it, folks. So we're going to get deeper into this on the other side. I hope you all come over to freemantv.com and check it all out. And, you know, help support my efforts. And you're going to love it. I promise. And, you know, you can subscribe for 1 month. You could subscribe for a year or have recurring. It's, you know, there's many, many ways to get over to freemantv.com and get all of that. And also check out Hans Utter. That's HANSUTTER.com. And start looking into Hans's books, and definitely you want to check out this amazing music he makes. So go check out HansUtter.com, and we will see you members on the other side.